You are listening to the Innovative OT Podcast, where we firmly believe that role-emerging and role-enhancing areas of practice are the future of occupational therapy. Dr. Sarah Anderson, OTD, is a mental health and pediatric OT, OT educator, and entrepreneur. Listen in on the conversation as Dr. Anderson and other OT innovators share their plans, goals, dreams, and aspirations for the future of the profession. If you're ready for some inspiration, motivation, and encouragement, you're in the right place. Here's your host, Dr. Sarah Anderson.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Innovative OT Podcast. I'm your host, Sarah. Today, it's just me. I'm so sorry. I almost always have a guest on, but this week, I don't. And I want to talk about kind of a unique topic, but obviously, OTs have been addressing this issue for a long time, but I think it's really important that we start bringing this issue to the forefront and learn how we can address it better during sessions for all populations. So the topic of today is anxiety, and I am starting to use the phrase, the occupation of worry often in a lot of my work. So I have an online course now I released a few weeks ago called The Occupation of Worry. I'm currently working on a paper on it, and I've submitted to present on this topic to a couple of different venues. So let's talk about worry as an occupation. So I'm sure many of you are thinking, worry is not an occupation, Sarah. Worry is like a client factor. But worry can be an occupation if you think about it. Occupation isn't just something that is productive or promotes health. There are, you know, quote, dark occupations. And other OTs have coined this term, dark occupations, to be able to represent the variety of different occupations that people engage in every single day. So just because an activity maybe isn't promoting your health or isn't considered productive doesn't take away the fact that it's occupying your time. I want you to think about, how often do you worry right now? With COVID-19, anxiety has skyrocketed in adults and in children. And I think it's time that we now really start to recognize that worry has become an occupation for many of us. For some of us, it has turned into almost a full-time job. You're worrying about COVID. You're worrying about, what if something happens to me outside of COVID and maybe I can't go to the doctor because there's not space for me? I live in Arizona, so I'm going to be honest, guys. Our current situation is not great, and it's very easy to find yourself so absorbed in worry. But is it healthy? Is it helping us? Is it having a detrimental effect on our health? And how do we not only help ourselves and our children, but how do we also help other people get through this time and worry less and experience less anxiety? So I have taken many, many courses on the topic of anxiety. It has been an interest of mine for a very long time. For those of you who have been listening to this podcast, you know my background. And for those of you who may be new, I just want to kind of give you a little bit of introduction and background as to where I've practiced. So I used to work at a child advocacy center for children who have been neglected and or abused. And I worked on regulation 100% of the time. So I got very good at addressing anxiety and helping people relax. I myself, during that period of time in my life, was a very relaxed person for the most part. So understanding what causes worry, what causes anxiety, is really important when you think about how you're going to address it. So today in this episode, I'm going to give you a little bit of a neuroscience lesson and maybe some ideas as to how you can address anxiety in your clinical practice from an evidence-based perspective. I do want to mention, if you are interested in looking at my course, absolutely no pressure to anyone to do this, but I will give you my email address at the end of the episode, and feel free to email me and I can give you a link to the course. But my course specifically goes into the neuroscience of anxiety when looking looking at how it manifests in the brain and body. And then I also go into detail on how to help people implement strategies into their daily routine, as well as using occupations as a way to manage and cope with anxiety. All right, guys. So here we go. Let's dive into anxiety. So I want you to remember, anxiety is a fear-based emotion. Okay, so you feel anxiety in your body because your brain is telling you that something is representing danger, that you are in imminent danger, and your brain is communicating to your body that it's go time. And then you get that fight or flight response. Okay, so anxiety can be created in the brain via two routes, and I'm going to give you examples to help you understand each route. So it's either cortex-based or it is amygdala-based, but the amygdala is the only place in the brain that truly manifests anxiety. It's all about the where is the anxiety initiated? Does it start in the cortex or does it start in the amygdala? Cortex-based anxiety is all about processing of sensory stimuli, and then your brain interprets it as dangerous. And then your brain communicates to itself and signals the amygdala to react. And then that's where you get the fight or flight response. So an example of cortex-based anxiety would be you are sitting in your house watching TV on a Friday night. And let's say your partner is out on a trip and they're not supposed to get back for a few days. And you hear the garage door opening, or what you think is the garage door opening. And you go, well, that's weird. They're not supposed to be back for a few days. Nobody else has the garage door opening. Who could it be? And then you start to panic and you think, what if it is an intruder? Or what if something happened and someone stole my garage door opener and now they're getting into my house? That is truly anxiety manifested in the cortex. You're thinking about it. You heard a noise. So that's the sensory stimuli, right? And then you're starting to process, what does that noise mean? You've determined the noise represents danger, and then the cortex communicates to the amygdala and goes, oh, time to react, and then the amygdala reacts, gives you that anxious response, and then you feel it in your body. Your heart starts racing. Maybe you're breathing more quickly. Maybe you feel like you have to go to the bathroom. Maybe your stomach's feeling really off. Amygdala-based anxiety is more anxiety that is triggered, much like PTSD. So a great example of this would be a veteran who maybe is walking through the mall and then a balloon pops and he's triggered because that popping sound maybe reminds them of gunshots back when they were serving in the military. So that is specifically a sensory stimuli that totally doesn't even go to the cortex. It goes sensory stimuli into the thalamus, straight to the amygdala, and then you get that anxious response. It's immediate. So those are two different ways how anxiety is created within the brain and then manifests throughout the body. Anxiety is an experience that you feel, much like most emotions, right? And it's the feeling that you then give meaning to through identification of an emotion. And I think it's really important to know that anxiety has a functional purpose. Anxiety is a protective mechanism. Imagine if our ancestors didn't experience anxiety, they probably all would have died. Anxiety is what protects us. So if you are feeling a lot of anxiety right now, you're feeling that way because you're probably hearing and seeing and thinking about things that are scary. So you need to figure out, how do I limit that kind of information, or how do I start to implement coping strategies to help me get through this time? And that's when I'm really talking about you as a person, or maybe you have a family member who's really struggling with anxiety, you know, during the pandemic. And you can implement a lot of the same strategies that you would with yourself or a family member, and you can do it with your clients as well. Cortex-based anxiety is best treated through cognitive-based strategies. Amygdala-based anxiety is treated best with other kinds of strategies. And there are a variety of different strategies, but obviously if someone is truly triggered, more like a PTSD reaction. It is really important then for them to get specific therapy with someone who specializes in trauma. I think most people right now are experiencing cortex-based anxiety. They are watching the news, they are listening to the news, they're thinking about it, and they get this really emotional response from it. My best suggestion is to very much limit the news that you take in. Right now, there's probably not a lot of great news when it comes to COVID. And if listening to the news isn't going to change how you react or respond or go about your daily life, really limit what you're taking in, because it may only add to the fear and may only increase the anxiety that you have. If you feel like you really want to watch the news because it's informative, but you're feeling a lot of anxiety, I would highly suggest regularly implementing coping strategies, and whether that is limiting the amount of caffeine you have, or maybe engaging in meditation on a regular basis, doing more mental breaks throughout the day. Exercise is actually one of the best ways to manage anxiety. Just 30 minutes a day of aerobic exercise 3 times a week can greatly decrease anxiety over time. It makes the amygdala less susceptible to activation. You can also do different strategies even if you're experiencing amygdala-based anxiety. What I meant by, you know, seeking out mental health therapy when it comes to amygdala-based anxiety is really if there's truly trauma at the core of what it is you're experiencing or someone you know is experiencing, mental health therapy can be so beneficial. But there are things you can do to make the amygdala less reactive. So let's talk about them. Okay, so we did exercise, yoga, and deep breathing. And actually, deep breathing is in the moment. It really helps to decrease activation of the amygdala in the moment. So and how that works physiologically is when you engage in deep breathing, it actually compresses the vagus nerve. Now, the vagus nerve is what innervates the parasympathetic nervous system. And when the vagus nerve is working, it can down-regulate the sympathetic nervous system, which means it can help decrease your perceived anxiety. Now, the sympathetic nervous system becomes activated because that is your fight or flight system. That is a system that gets you ready to do something when your brain detects danger. All right, everybody. So we're going to do a deep breathing exercise together. I want you to, if you're driving, you keep driving. But if you are in a place where you're able to just sit back, kind of close your eyes, keep your eyes open if it makes you feel more comfortable. And I want you to go in for 4, out for 4. And I want you to remember to breathe throughout the day. If you're finding yourself experiencing physical symptoms of anxiety, it's okay to take a moment and just stop. And I think in American culture, we forget to do this, but it's really important to just take a moment and stop and breathe and take in whatever is around you. Because you are safe in this moment. And it's important to remind your brain that you're safe. Because when you're constantly worrying, your brain is going to feel like you're in danger, and it's going to react and respond to protect you. So that's just a little neuro lesson there on anxiety and what's happening in the brain and body. And obviously, there's so much more that goes into it. But I think by just understanding the very basics, it can help us better understand how to address anxiety. So if any of you have ever tried to use a weighted blanket to treat anxiety, it's just not going to work. It can be used to help ground people, but a weighted blanket is not going to take away anxiety. And if you're someone that thinks it will, I really want you to think about what is driving the anxiety, and it's amygdala activation. And we have to figure out how do we decrease activation of the amygdala. so that that person experiences less anxiety. We can, as OTs, we can utilize coping mechanisms, stress management skills. But I want to challenge you to think about what else can OT do, right? We can help people also engage in daily occupations that can help decrease the time spent worrying. We can also help people start up new occupations that can help decrease activation of the amygdala, like exercise, taking up yoga, maybe even crafting if that is meaningful to somebody. We really need to do our best to figure out how to best help our clients during right now, because even if you're seeing somebody for, let's say, working with a kid on handwriting, or maybe you're working with an adult.
We also have a very unique skill set when it comes to understanding habits and daily routines.
You know, chances are they may have a certain level of anxiety going on right now
because of
how many people in the United States, even globally, have lost their jobs
or even their day-to-day routines in our community.
And let's think about how that contributes to anxiety and depression.
And we have to be willing to dive into the research and figure out
how new occupations or even occupations problem if we're not that they used to engage in regularly
that they have since lost because they have time for it. How can we help them reintegrate them back into their daily schedule to give them meaning and hope, and maybe even utilizing it as a coping mechanism? So I actually used to love to journal when I was younger. It's very like reflective process for me, and I am a person that feels very deeply. I'm extremely empathetic, which, you know, can be a good thing, but it also means that I can really absorb the emotions of other people. And I, during, you know, the pandemic, I've really picked up journaling to be able to express my emotions and work through them. And if I'm experiencing a high level of anxiety in a moment, to be able to really reflect on what's going on. So I want to give you an example, my own personal example. So my daughter is 12 months old, and she is transitioning into a new room at daycare because she's reached the age and the skill level where she can be in the transition room. And I am so very comfortable with her infant room, and I'm finding all these reasons why I don't think she should be going to the transition room. And as an OT, you would think that I would be really supportive and so excited for her. But I feel like because I am experiencing a lack of control in my own life due to COVID, that my comfort was with this infant room and the people around her. So I'm experiencing a high level of emotion with this transition. And I journaled about it the other day, and I really had a lot of clarity that it has a lot less to do with her transitioning to this transition room and a lot more with me needing to find additional coping mechanisms throughout my day to help my amygdala not be so activated. So today is a very short episode because it's just me, and you, I'm sure you all only want to listen to me talk for, you know, so long. But I really wanted to introduce the topic of occupation as a worry and really encouraging occupational therapists to start addressing anxiety. And maybe it's not even, you know, directly in your treatment sessions, but checking in with people and learning how it is that we can help people, you know, take control of their anxiety and be able to manage it better during this COVID-19 time. And if you are an occupational therapist and you've experienced occupational deprivation or occupational imbalance, or maybe you're working with COVID-19 patients, I really want you to pay attention to yourself and your own needs. And I want you to be really self-aware of what your brain and body are trying to tell you, and practice self-care during this time. And really think about if you're experiencing an increased level of anxiety. I really want you to reflect on, why am I experiencing so much more anxiety? What part of my brain is it stemming from? And how can I best address it? Exercise, aerobic exercise, is a very important thing right now. Drinking plenty of water, a diet full of nutrients, limit caffeine, yoga, meditation, mental breaks are all fantastic ways of reducing activation of the amygdala, which is important no matter where your anxiety is stemming from. And then if you're experiencing a lot of cortex-based anxiety, so you're having a lot of thoughts and you're a lot of processing of sensory stimuli that is creating this perception of danger, even though you are totally safe, I want you to think about incorporating more cognitive-based interventions. So maybe some journaling and really reflecting on why it is you're worrying or experiencing anxiety. Maybe you even schedule a worry time for yourself. So you say, all right, brain, this is not the time to worry, but when 3 p.m. hits, I'm going to give myself a half hour to worry, and I'm going to worry productively. I'm going to open my worry journal, and I'm going to write about it, and I'm going to be intentional with it. And maybe you even have a buddy where you separately journal for a while, and you can share that space together. And so long as it's productive, you could even share what it is you're writing about to help each other process your worries and your anxiety. Take time to take care of yourself. I can't emphasize it enough, guys. This pandemic is really testing us, but we're gonna get through it. This is not the first pandemic the world has ever experienced, but it is the first modern day pandemic that we in the United States have experienced. So if you have any questions regarding this podcast or my course, The Occupation of Worry, please feel free to message me at Sarah, S-A-R-A-H, N as in Nancy, O-T-R, @gmail.com. I will give you a direct link to my course, and I can answer any questions that you may have. I hope that you all have a wonderful evening and fantastic weekend, and I will see you next time on the Innovative OT.